This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to a truly historic Bugle issue 176. The last ever Bugle episode 176. There will never be another Bugle 176. It is also potentially the last ever Bugle recorded in this studio in Wapping. And potentially the last full Bugle episode of 2011. And with Times Online. The point is, Buglers, we're moving on. Well, technically, we're being moved on and told that there's nothing to see here. We're being moved to pastures new somewhere, hopefully, and we hope that you'll come with us, Buglers. Not physically, that is the whole point of the internet. But this is the end of an era. But maybe the start of a new one. I'm Andy Saltzman, live in this tumultuous, shocked city of London, which is still digesting the news from this week that Times Online and the Bugle are getting divorced. And in New York City, it's John Oliver.
That's right. Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Set your clocks to history. I'm afraid that we have to start this Bugle off with some bad news. The Times has decided to drop us after 3 years. Or was it been 4 years? Anyway.
50 months, John.
50 months. Yeah. 50 whole months and 176 episodes of some of the fastest flowing bullshit this side of an industrial crop sprayer. And not just any crop sprayer, Andy. I'm talking about the Farm Fertilizer 5000. I believe that playing the Bugle to any crop is clinically proven to get them to grow faster, longer and weirder. It has been a remarkably long relationship that we've had with the Times, Andy, and clearly for them, it's run its course. It's no one's fault that the relationship has ended, and it's definitely not ours. And the Times has essentially sat us down and looked us straight in the eyes and said, it's not us, it's you. Clear out your things, I never want to hear from you ever again. As for what the future holds for the Bugle, as you say, Andy, it's hard to predict. The problem is going to be that it's strangely not actually cheap to produce something that's quite this worthless. most other podcasts are done by people just verbally vomiting into their laptops and uploading the detritus to iTunes. Unfortunately, Andy and I currently live 3,000 miles apart, so we have to hire two studios, two engineers, plus employ Chris to put it all together, and he costs about £1.2 million a year in cocaine alone. That kind of commitment takes a lot of bankrolling, and just imagine how many phones you have to tap to be able to afford that. Let us go out. Let us go out on our own terms.
So, Times Online, after 4 years of very generously hosting and funding us, mm-hmm. and putting us up and putting up with us, they've decided that not only do all good things come to an end, but also some f***ing awesome things come to an end as well. And so, the Bugle is, we are leaving Times. I'd like to say a thank you to Times Online for hosting us for all this time. It's been, they've been very good to us. Mm-hmm. Bearing in mind that, you know, I don't think we've been their biggest revenue earner. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't think we've earned them a single penny.
Not one.
Well, we are mustard keen to carry on, the Frenchest of all possible mustards. And from the reaction on the Bugle Twitter feed, at Hello Buglers, which is, of course, scientifically representative of the entire world, a lot of you want us to carry it on as well. Thanks a huge amount for your messages of support and encouragement and threats of physical harm if we do stop doing the Bugle. Nice to get those out in the open. Thanks very much. I'm genuinely and deeply moved by your comment. It was extremely gratifying to read that so many of you are so keen for us to... Sorry, I just cannot do sincerity. You're all... John, you're an actor. Tell them how much it means to you.
Hold on, let me think myself into this. Thank you, Buglers. It's been a very gratifying show of support. Next. What can we offer a potential sponsor as the Bugle, Andy? Well, I'm a Smurf. That has to count for something. That movie made $500 million. That could, I mean, think about it. That could keep us going for 3 or 4 months, especially if Chris cuts back on his debilitating cocaine habit. The truth is that, you know, we would love to keep going, and it might be difficult. We're going to need to find some way of covering our costs, or, I can't believe I'm saying this, the final post of the Bugle may sound. Any breakup is hard, Andy, and it's always tempting to lash out at the other side's flaws, to hurt them as a way of, you know, kind of conquering your own pain inside. But it's important not to do that. So on that note, I don't know about you, Andy, but I'd like to wish News International nothing but the very best in the future, fighting their court cases for phone tapping. I wish them the best, Andy. I mean that. I wish them the best. The best will probably be some kind of gigantic out-of-court settlement, certainly not a not-guilty verdict, because the whole thing stinks to high heaven. But all the best to them, Andy, in their future endeavours.
I just want justice, yes. Justice to prevail, John. I'm a justice fan. Above everything else, I wave the flag of justice from my bedroom window every morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks also for your ideas on how we might keep it going and potential partnerships that you've suggested to me on Twitter. And also for those who responded to the on the new Bugle Facebook page, which is the Bugle Podcast. I put up a poll to see how you think we might carry on with the Bugle. And there's been also on Twitter, the wonders of the internet. Someone started a Save the Bugle hashtag. I think the Bugle is probably more important to the world than, for example, saving the whales or saving Syria. I think the Bugle probably is where humanity should start. And thanks very much for those of you who've contributed to that. In particular, a poster called at Bones Egg Bones, who I've no idea who he is, but he has launched a campaign to alert the great good and bad of the world to the need to save the Bugle. And here are an example of some of his messages. He began with, "F*** you, Rupert," brackets, though also many thanks for the previous 4 years of Bugle support. In my eyes, it balances out the stuff. Hashtag save the Bugle.
Well, that hurts more than it helps.
Then to at official BP, at Shell, at Nestle USA, at McDonald's, at Balfour Beatty, at Vodafone, at Bell Pottinger and various others. I am willing to ignore corporate malfeasance if you hashtag save the Bugle.
There we go. There's 15 potential top sponsors gone.
At Barack Obama, at Mitt Romney. I'm willing to forgive pointless invasions of funny-sounding countries if you hashtag save the Bugle. At Ed Miliband, at number 10 Gov, at Nick Clegg. I'm willing to forgive ineffective and petty leadership styles if you hashtag save the Bugle. Piers Morgan, Lord Sugar, will forgive you being such pig-faced, media-hungry, tepid, tedious showers if you hashtag save the Bugle. At LSE News from the London School of Economics, we'll forgive any shady, regretful deals with chonky dictators, brackets, bloodthirsty or otherwise, if you hashtag save the Bugle. At Berlusconi, I will never smash an ornamental depiction of a place of worship into your hellish face if you hashtag save the Bugle. Come on, Berlusconi, you've got a bit of spare time. At God, at Satan, at as yet unidentified creator, you can have soul and exclusive rights to my eternal soul if you hashtag save the Bugle. At Robert Mugabe, at Bashar al-Assad, I'll arrange for you not to die in a bloody miserable death in a storm drain if you hashtag save the Bugle. At the Herman Cain, at Sarah Palin USA, at Rudy Giuliani, I'll back you to the max for a combined three-way presidency if you hashtag save the Bugle. Simon Cowell, I'll look my mother in the eye and swear that you are beneficial to the music industry if you hashtag save the Bugle. And I will never ever forget about Dr. Dre if he can use his access to weaponry and media outlets to hashtag save the Bugle. And there were various others, including at Dalai Lama, I'm a man of religion. This is a quote from the Dalai Lama. I'm a man of religion, but religion alone cannot answer all our problems. Agreed? Solution? This. Hashtag save the Bugle. So there it is. Thanks,
well
sir.
Well done. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Genuinely. Also, this another one too, at Rick Santorum. Quoting Mr. Santorum, I'm in awe of what God can do with us if we seek him and his truth.
Yes.
And at Bones Egg Bones adds, nothing on Andy's dog puns. Hashtag save the Bugle. So thanks, Buglers, for your support. And as we say, we will do everything in our power to keep this, to make sure Bugle 177 does happen. In the meantime, we will have the two scheduled review of the year shows next week and in between Christmas and New Year. Then after New Year, who knows? Do follow the Bugle Twitter feed at Hello Buglers. and check on the Bugle webpage, such as it is, which is thebuglepodcast.com, and just listen out. Keep your ear to the ground, Buglers. You will hear. There will be a sign. A sign from above. Follow the star. So anyway, let's back to business. This is issue 176 of The Bugle, the world's foremost news resource for the week, beginning Monday, the 19th of December, 2011, leaving the intriguing cliffhanger, John. The Bugle is now tied with Star Trek Deep Space Nine on 176 full episodes.
Is that true?
That is true, John. Thank you, Wikipedia. Who is going to take a decisive lead in 2012? Oh, I mean, bearing in mind Deep Space Nine was cancelled in 1999, mm-hmm. I think we've got the edge. Go, well, Bugle! Go, Bugle! And for the week beginning Monday, the 19th of December, 2011, meaning that exactly 2011 years ago, Mary was probably whinging her little head off to Joseph. I feel dreadful. I just want it to happen. My back is sore and I really don't feel attractive. Yep. Okay, love. Come on, Joseph, I need your support. Look, I'm really still not comfortable with all this. And I've just built her a cot. Good one, too. I usually charge 50 shekels for that. You definitely want me to paint it pink. Yes, Joseph, I'm absolutely sure it's going to be a girl. I can just feel it. We're going to call her G. Susan. What if it's a boy, Mary? No, I'm set on G. Susan, or a shortening thereof. Oh, I'm not sure about that, Mary. Life ain't easy for a boy named Jesus.
Oh, my God. Do you know what?
What?
I get it, Times. I get it. I get it. It's just all of a sudden it became clear. I get it.
And as always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin this week. A special section on how to deal with potentially losing something you love. No, we're not going to need that, Buglers. Oh, stop crying, the lot of you.
You're right, Andy. For now, let's carry on like nothing is happening. Let us, like Nero, pick up our violins of bullshit and fiddle on while Rome is burning outside. Let's put together a Bugle to stand proudly alongside its 175 infantile siblings. Nothing can stop the Bugle, Andy, other than a complete cut-off in its funding, which has just happened. But other than that, nothing can stop us. So let's give the Buglers the bullshit that they neither need nor deserve, but seem to inexplicably desire anyway. Friends, Buglers, lend us your ears! Top story this week, David Cameron bladder news. You see, this is what the Times is giving up, Andy. This is a vital public service that we've been providing. What other podcast is going to see the incredible things that are happening around the world at the moment and then lead with an analysis of a world leader's bladder? This is emotional penicillin that we're providing, Andy. It's comedic crack. Of course, it's not good for you, but that doesn't mean it's easy to give up. You've got to wean yourself off this kind of bullshit. Anyway, the point is, last week, Britain caused a full diplomatic hullabaloo in Europe, as we mentioned, by vetoing the new proposals for EU fiscal integration in response to the brewing European economic tsunami of pain. And the result is that there's now essentially a two-tier Europe, a fast lane and a slow lane. And Britain is currently driving in neither. Instead, we're just standing on the side of the road, shouting at the passing traffic. Everybody f*** off! You don't know me! I used to be the most powerful country in the world! 2/3 of the world's landmass, you speeding metal dick splashes! The sun never set on me! I don't need you. I don't need your stupid continent. I'm the greatest! All of you can go f*** yourselves! 26 of the 27 member states agreed to the new fiscal rules, with only Britain's itchy veto finger going up. Essentially, at the last minute, David Cameron demanded huge protections for the City of London, none of which anyone was willing to give him, so he vetoed the EU proposals. Was this the right thing to do? Well, I guess there's no conclusively right answer to that, but many economists seem to suggest no. As you mentioned last week, Andy, Britain has conducted itself throughout our history under the rock-solid rule that if you're annoying the French, you're probably doing the right thing. But this time, we may have taken it a bit too far.
Maybe just a little too far. You never know, John. You never know. I mean, you know, there's still Gibraltar. There's the Falkland Islands. We've still got an empire, John.
That's
we
true.
Do we still have Canada? You're nearer that than Well, I don't suppose anyone's heard from them for like 50 years or so.
It's not a question of whether we still have it, it's whether we still want it.
Oh, okay, right.
The Queen likes it, and so, you know, if she likes it, we've got it.
Yep. But perhaps a slightly concerning angle on this was that during these extremely important talks, stories emerged that David Cameron, Britain's professional Prime Minister, deliberately left himself absolutely busting for a piss. In order, apparently, to maintain his concentration and presumably from to stop him from falling asleep. Now, you might... the evidence is clear from the transcripts, John. Three times David Cameron says to Nicola Sarkozy, who was sitting next to him, could you please stop pouring water slowly into your glass? But evidently, it's slightly concerning for me, John, that participating in make-or-break talks about the future of the continent was not quite enough to concentrate his mind on its own. He needed to need a piss as well.
It's just incredible. These were incredibly tense 9-hour negotiations. And apparently Cameron used, as you mentioned, his tried and tested full bladder technique, which he claims helps him achieve, and I quote, maximum focus and clarity of thought. During the formal dinner in Brussels and subsequent discussions, the Prime Minister intentionally kept himself in a state where he was, and again I quote, desperate for a pee. That is a high-stakes gamble, Andy. Sure, your laser focus may be working for you for a while. You might be in the power position. But if you wet yourself, you are going to lose the negotiating high ground. No one is going to cave to someone who has an increasingly large puddle around the base of their chair.
Well, as Neville Chamberlain can vociferously testify.
Apparently Cameron has used this technique successfully before. He himself admitted using it during his famous no notes speech at his party conference early on in his leadership of the Conservative Party. Now, you might be thinking, where did David Cameron get such a stupid idea? Well, the answer will not disappoint you. Apparently he heard about it while watching a documentary about the old, famously massive racist Conservative Enoch Powell, who said that he always delivered an important speech on a full bladder, arguing that, and again, I quote, you should do nothing to decrease the tension before making a big speech. If anything, you should seek to increase it. Powell was famous, of course, for his horrendous Rivers of Blood speech in 1968, and it actually makes the race hate a little harder to swallow if you think of the Conservative MP and platinum prick bursting for a piss while he's delivering it. As I look ahead, I am filled with foreboding. Like the Roman, I seem to see the River Tiber foaming with much blood. Oh, God, let me take that back. I don't want to think about rivers trickling or anything foaming. Oh, holy shit, I need a piss so bad now. Oh, God. come on, Enoch, you can do this. No good. Long speech short, immigrants are awful. Okay, everyone out of my way, I'm making a dash for the toilet.
But also, it's a risky thing politically, because it really illustrates whether or not the British government thinks something is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, look at that. Cameron's just necked an entire flagon of elderflower cordial. We could be on the brink of war. But also, it shows more importantly when he doesn't give a shit. Reportedly, whenever he's in talks with trade union leaders or the Secretary of State for Employment, he doesn't even drink a thimbleful of water, John. Not a sausage.
Just think of the horror and the pain that could have been avoided, though, Andy, if during one of Hitler's speeches at the Nuremberg rallies, he just lost control and wet himself. Rather than getting swept away by his hateful oratory, the crowd would have immediately had his spell broken and thought, oh, look, he's just a spiteful little man who's so irrationally angry he can't stop turning himself into an impromptu piss sprinkler. Before the entire crowd started chanting, Hitler's wet himself, Hitler's wet himself. And the history of the 20th century Europe is rewritten in an instant, Andy.
I was in a band called Impromptu Piss... Sprinkler. Piss Sprinkler, that's it.
It was your band. How could you forget the name?
Those days are pretty hazy, John, you know.
The truth is, though, Andy, there's not a single historic speech that does not become instantly humanised by thinking of the speaker desperate to go to the bathroom. This is one small step for man. Oh, boy, I should have gone to the bathroom back on the landing module before I came down here. One giant leap for mankind. Easy, Neil, just think about something else. Oh, no. Houston, we have a problem. The only thing...
I have a dream. A dream in which I really, really need a piss, but I just can't find anywhere to have one. What is wrong with this?
The only thing that would have made the Gettysburg Address any better would have been if Lincoln had needed to have two stabs at it. 47 years ago. Actually, you know what? Hold that thought. I'll be back in 2 minutes. That way, for the rest of time, the Gettysburg Address would technically begin like this. Oh, God, that's better. 47 years ago. Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, Andy, would have been even more impressive if people had said, did you see what Jesus did? He fed the entire crowd with one loaf and five fishes. To which someone had replied, never mind that, the guy hasn't gone to the toilet for 3 days. It's a miracle, he's a machine, part man, part camel. And when he does urinate, he says he's going to come out as wine. I don't know about that last part, all I know is that I'm sticking around to watch it.
Oh, this blue nun is off. maybe he's right though, John. Maybe this is the problem that's been causing so many problems around the world. Maybe the Middle East would be a peaceful utopia if only pissing was banned.
Yes.
Who knows? There was one piece of obviously bullshit scientific research that concluded that the extreme urge to void or urinate is associated with impaired cognition. Now, of course, regarding the Cameron case, some might say that being a conservative is associated with impaired cognition, and being a career politician is associated with seriously impaired cognition. So why not add a busting bladder to that cocktail of cognitive crapness? This was reported in the Journal of Neuro-Urology and Neurodynamics. Cracking read that, which this month features a range of Christmas-themed urination articles. From the best times to urinate on Christmas Day, they suggest a morning Christmas wee-wee. How much mulled wine to drink if you want to be drunk and replete enough to urinate a full picture of the nativity scene in the snow. And also what to do if reindeer piss comes at you from the sky.
How can you give this up? It's the perfect compliment to hard news.
Anyway, well, I guess the point is, John, that leaks increasingly have been an important part of top-level politics. Just a different kind of leak. Boom!
There was
do you really not want to be able to listen to that every week, Mr. Murdoch?
Yeah, gosh, he's cut off his nose to spite his face. There was footage. The EU were, understandably, a little miffed by the behaviour of Britain and David Cameron. And there's footage of Nicolas Sarkozy seemingly refusing to shake David Cameron's hand at a press conference after the negotiations. In fact, he only just stopped short of putting out his hand and then pulling it away at the last minute and flipping him the bird in the face instead. There are also rumours that other EU delegates had actually brought in a new official translator to translate what David Cameron was saying from the, and I quote, language of complete arsehole that he's been speaking this entire conference. Prime Minister of Italy, Mario Monti, said, it's no good, I can't understand a word he's saying. I don't speak arsehole. Can anyone help me? Also, there was a great true story about David Cameron, who apparently was, after the negotiations collapsed, forced to share an awkward elevator ride after the nine-hour meeting with Angela Merkel. And that must have been really tense, Andy. I wouldn't have blamed Angela Merkel for looking at him and saying, what floor do you need, David? I was going to go to the third floor, but do you want to veto that and just press the alarm so that no one can go anywhere? Would you prefer that, David? Oh, and actually, I meant to say, I think it's diplomatic protocol in the EU that you have to buy me a bottle of wine and some dinner and then maybe even tickets to a West End musical or something, because then, David, and only then, is it appropriate for you to f*** me like you just did in there?
Well, that would be appropriate, though, John, wouldn't it? That's the little John Oliver guide to seduction. Britain is, nevertheless, set to have, quote, observer status in continuing negotiations over the EU accords that we steadfastly refuse to sign. I guess we'll be a bit like a losing game show contestant, John, seeing what we could have won. So, Britain, you're going away empty-handed today, but let's just see what you could have taken home with you. Well, you could have gone away with today's star prize, and that is a central role in building a stable and peaceful future for Europe, one of the world's top six continents, with all the business and social opportunities that entails, a role befitting a nation of your supposed status. But you won't be getting that. But On the flip side, you also won't be getting today's booby prize, which is a central role in the economic meltdown of one of the world's shittest six continents, with all the economic and political chaos that entails. Which would it have been? Tune in next year to find out. Iraq war news now, and they said it would all be over by Christmas, and it is! Admittedly, the Christmas they were referring to was Christmas 1914, and the war was the First World War, a war which, in the ultimate of ironies, helped give birth to the modern nation of Iraq. But it is all over by Christmas 2011 in Iraq, unless you count any lingering mayhem that may ensue. Ah, f*** it, we're out of there. It's all over by Christmas, John.
That's right. Andy, in 2003, President George Bush stood under a banner that read, "Mission accomplished," and declared the Iraq war over. And just 8 short years later, he's been proven completely right. The only thing he was guilty of was being ahead of his time, Andy. That was a visionary statement by the Commander-in-Chief then. It just took the rest of the world, conditions on the ground in Iraq and facts, a little longer to catch up with him.
He's like the Galileo of politics, John.
He was more than that, Andy. He's like the Velvet Underground of logic. Too ahead of his time to be properly appreciated. The flag of the American forces in Iraq was lowered in Baghdad last night, bringing nearly 9 years of US military operations in Iraq to a formal end. Basically, the meal of devastation that we've served them has reached its coffee and chocolates course, and the bill is now being pushed across the table, and it's f***ing massive. America is now tapping its pockets, searching for its credit card, saying, "Wow, I didn't think it was going to be quite this expensive. I'm not sure I can really afford this. Maybe we should split this bill up among the coalition." Now, who bombed what? Does this even include tip? Because my tip would be, maybe you should tell people how much it's going to cost to invade your country before they make a reservation here.
It's fair to say that Iraq has not been the least controversial war in history. And, you know, it's kind of hard. I guess, you know, we have to wait for history to pass its judgment, John. Mm-hmm. Let's just pass it now. It was, at best, a bit of a blooper. Mm-hmm. Saddam was without any question at all a fully paid up member of the club. But you have to ask, was a war resulting in the deaths of thousands of Allied servicemen and 100,000 Iraqis, probably a lot more, was that the most effective way of rescinding his membership of that club? Maybe we could have explored a few other options.
The Iraq War's chief architect was President George W. Bush, although he was only really an architect in the sense that a child is an architect when they're drawing a picture of a house with a half-melted crayon clutched in a balled-up fist. And even George W. Bush, way back in 2004, described the war as a catastrophic success. That's a direct quote showing the same kind of control over language that he and Donald Rumsfeld demonstrated over war planning. Although, I guess you could use the same kind of industrial semantic welding techniques to Bush's legacy, which you might like to describe as a glorious disaster, or an impressive cluster, or even a first-class nightmare. There were surely more dictionary-compliant descriptions of the Iraq War that he could have used, perhaps objectively illegal, ill-conceived or unforgivably poorly planned, all of which he could have used without any linguistic flags getting thrown at him by international referees. The question being posed in America and around the world now clearly is, was it worth it? To which the answer is clearly no. Financially, no. Physically, no. Philosophically, well, who can say? There's no right answer to that, although my gut instinct is still no. The literal cost to the war in America alone is around $1 trillion. Also, as of last Friday, the war in Iraq had claimed 4,487 American lives, with another 32,226 Americans wounded in action, according to Pentagon statistics. And that is a horrific cost to bear, Andy. Buglers, and this is a moment of, I guess, strange sincerity as well. Buglers may or may not be aware that I have a personal connection to this particular roller coaster of pain. My wife is an Iraq war veteran. She was a combat medic with the US Army and deployed to Iraq during some of the worst moments of that war. I was, and I still am, hugely against the decision to go to war in Iraq, and equally couldn't be more proud of what she and those she served with were able to do in the conditions that I'm extremely glad I can only imagine. The war lives on with us in our home and will do until the day she dies. Some of the blood spilt in Iraq was hers, alongside those that she tried to save in the midst of streets of violent chaos, some successfully, some not. Now, if you have any question about how well supported the troops were, You would not believe the lack of equipment, lack of body armour, lack of desert boots, even lack of vehicles with doors on them, that she and so many other brave soldiers from the US and the UK were generously not provided with. And for that, I would like to say to Donald Rumsfeld, thank you very much. Sorry, did I say thank you there, Andy? I meant to say f*** you very much. I'm always getting those two words mixed up, Andy, thank and f***. It made my acceptance speech for best poem by an 8-year-old at school a little controversial, to be honest. I'd just like to say f*** you so much to everyone who voted for my poem. F*** you from the bottom of my 8-year-old heart. Sorry, thank you. What did I say? Oh, thanking hell. I really thanked up this time. Well, hold on, what did I just say then? Oh, f*** God for that. Oh, what? What? What's everyone getting so angry about? OK, look, I'll just keep it short. I want to f*** everybody for this award. And I'd like to f*** my parents for all their support. What? What?
Who said satire was dead?
See, Andy, sincerity follows by the relief of childishness.
I believe it's probably a reasonable kind of summation of the history of humanity.
And John grew up in Yorkshire.
That's right. And then realised that he didn't, and so moved his accent south.
Well, I guess we have to ask John, what would have happened if there hadn't been an Iraq war? And I guess the answer is, we'd probably all be speaking Iraqi by now. Those of us who were still alive. The Bugle itself would have been little more than a propaganda vehicle for Saddam's evil regime as it consolidated power in London and Washington, with occasional pun runs about how shit democracy is and that human rights are for sissies. Although, under closer inspection, the two sides in the war might not have been as far apart on that issue as would have been ideal. Also, the unbridled spread of weapons of mass destruction would have accelerated unchecked to the point where more people in the world would have owned a WMD than a dog. And a Sunday morning stroll in the park near where I live in South London wouldn't have made you think as it currently does. Wow, there seems to be an unbelievable number of aggressive-looking pooches around here. Has Michael Vick just moved into the area? But would instead have made you think, oh, that's sweet, a daddy and his kids taking their new chemical warhead for a walkies. A touching family vignette. Well, Buglers, I guess it's very easy for us to criticise Bush and Blair for how they conducted themselves in Iraq, but...
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is, yeah, distressingly easy.
Really depressingly easy.
Extremely justified as well. But I mean, have any of you actually yourselves ever called an invasion of somewhere and then politically seen it through?
Yeah,
it's a deafening silence I'm hearing there from
point.
You, Buglers. So to help judge whether or not you have the leadership qualities required to make these tough decisions, here is, back from the Zaltzman Back Archive... leadership, multiple choice questionnaire. John, I'm going to put you on the spot here and get you to answer
okay.
it. So here's leadership scenario one. Dealing with a problem of your own making. You're at someone else's house. You've just done a massive shit on their living room carpet.
Yep.
What do you
Witness
do next?
So far. Yep.
Do you? We've all been there.
Yeah.
Do you? We all know how difficult it can be to smooth the troubles social waters and internet like that can cause. So do you A, apologise, clear it up and promise it will never happen again? Do you B, laugh and leave? That's the old British Empire tactic. Or do you C, keep on shitting on their carpet so that when you eventually do stop shitting on their carpet, they will, in a strange way, quite grateful to you?
C, Andy, C.
That is the Iraq option, John. That's, you just have to play the long game. Now, scenario two, achieving an objective. You're at a village fete, John, enjoying traditional village fete activities like looking at tables full of things, getting the number of things inside another thing and throwing things at other things. It's 2 o'clock. You've just come out of the village pub, the King and Führer. The village really did hedge its bets during the early days of the war. At this point, you decide that you want to become the village hero. So you publicly announce that you will win at the Coconut Shy. Now, having declared this, as a leader, you must now achieve this coconut-toppling objective at all costs. So do you A, keep legitimately throwing balls at the coconut until you succeed? Do you B, promise everyone a free ice cream from Mr. Whippy Van, then while they're all distracted queuing up, scamper up to the coconuts, pick it up, leap into the ice cream van and speed away in a cloud of dust, screaming, "So long, suckers, don't blame me, blame the World Trade Organization." Or do you C, to absolutely ensure the success of your coconut destabilization program, you buy a fleet of B-52 bombers, you fly over the fate and you bomb the entire village, killing 725 innocent civilians, but ensuring that the coconut does fall. Mission accomplished.
C, Andy. C, you've
got it right again, John. Yeah. You are presidential quality. Scenario C, leadership in a crisis. You're the captain of a large ship. You notice the ship is heading straight for an enormous iceberg. So do you A, alert your fellow crew members to the impending danger and collectively do everything you can to avoid the iceberg.
That sounds good.
B, as a leader of the ship, you must not be seen to back down under any circumstances. That would make you appear unelectably gay. Therefore, order the ship to speed up, hold its course straight for the iceberg, and exude the smug authority of a true modern leader, whilst you monitor the situation from a nearby lifeboat. Or do you see, nuke the iceberg, and scream at any other bits of ice to come and have a f***ing go if you think you're hard enough. Announce that the reign of terror of ice, or as you call it, evil water, will be stopped, and declare an all-out war on water. It's been holding us to ransom for far too long. Drink me or you'll die. Wah, wah, wah. It's one of the most arrogant of all compounds, a disgrace to the good names of hydrogen, and oxygen. It must be stopped.
See again, Andy.
C, correct, John. You are essentially an unelected president.
Yes!
Congratulations.
I knew it!
There you go. There's a little snippet into Zaltzman's stand-up circa 2003. We're looking to the future in this episode, Buglers. But we're also looking to the past.
Royal family smack talk news now! And, well, Andy, if you insult the Queen of England, you know what will happen.
If?
She will track you down.
When?
And she will kick the shit out of you. It might not be straight away. She's a busy lady, but she's got a long memory, Andy. Not to mention fists like piston engines. That's why they call her the jewel-encrusted jackhammer, the upper crust with the uppercut, the Windsor whirlwind, the puncher from the palace and the regal rumbler. But, Andy, we're not talking about the Queen here. We're talking about the royal family of Thailand, because you insult the royal family of Thailand, and you had better be prepared to clear your diary for a few years. A US citizen has just been jailed in Thailand for 2.5 years for insulting them. Joe Gordon, a used car salesman from Colorado who was born in Thailand, admitted the charge of lèse majesté, or insulting the king, after translating a book critical of the King of Thailand called The King Never Smiles and posting the extracts on a blog. The King of Thailand, aged 84, is the world's longest reigning monarch and is revered as semi-divine by many Thais. Anybody convicted in Thailand of insulting the king, queen, heir or regent faces long prison sentences. And it actually gets worse, Andy. The authorities have passed a new law in Thailand, the Computer Crimes Act, that increases their powers to tackle any perceived insults to the monarchy on the internet or through mobile phones. Prosecutions under the law have increased dramatically in recent years amid the chronic political instability there. Last month, a 61-year-old man was jailed for 20 years for sending 4 text messages that were deemed offensive to the Thai Queen, and the man said he didn't even know how to send a text message.
Yeah, Joe Gordon was born as Lerpong Wichai Komart. Now, there is a man who got bored of hearing the words, "Can you spell that for me, please?" And, yeah, as you say, he posted a link to an unauthorised biography of the Thai King, Bhumibol Adulyadej. And I'm sorry if I've not pronounced that right. Actually, I'm not. He can go f*** himself. But I'm never going to Thailand. They don't play cricket there. But I guess that unauthorised biography was probably a better read than the authorised biography of the Thai King. And here's an excerpt from that. One day, King Bhumibol woke up. He looked awesome. The 84-year-old monarch twitched his incredible pecs. Man, is he ripped for his age. Then he did 150 keepy uppies with a live gerbil, then cured 25 cancer patients just by winking at them. What a sensational king he is. He put on his crown, looked even more awesome, then did that morning's cryptic crossword in under a minute. He beat his personal slave Garry Kasparov at chess in just 3 moves, then cooked his breakfast. Sausages so tasty that animals of all known species were queuing up outside his palace, begging to be slaughtered and sausaged up for him. Jeez Louise, that king's got zing. So I guess the unofficial one is probably a better read. And yesterday, John, this is another activist was sentenced to a stint in one of Thailand's less luxurious compulsory no-star hotels. 15 years for Darani Chon Choeng Silpakul.
Perfect.
Nicknamed Da Torpedo for her aggressive speaking style. Might start calling my wife the same. Not Da Torpedo, I mean Darani Dan Choeng Silpakul. It just kind of suits her. And this woman's crime was making mild insinuations, possibly tangentially referring to the monarch, at a public rally. 15 years in the slammer, John. She's pretty close to being Thailand's Jeffrey Dahmer for doing that. And as you say, last month, a 61-year-old grandfather, Amphon Tangnopakul, received a 20-year sentence for these four text messages. He needs to switch to a less punitive tariff, John. Hey, Mikey, what do your texts cost you? 5p each, I think. Yours, Brenda? Well, they're free as part of my monthly bundle. What about you, Amphon? What do your texts cost? 5 years in jail per SMS. Man, you need to learn to shop around. I know, but I just can't be arsed. I got a free phone and the shop assistant was pretty. I thought, I'm not going to text that much anyway. Lucky I didn't send the picture messages, eh? So Joe Gordon has called for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton to intervene on his behalf. The US Consul General at the American Embassy in Bangkok called his sentence, quotes, too high for just expressing his free speech. And it does sound like she's being very careful with her words, John. I think what she probably meant was the multi-billion dollar constitutionally inviolable Thai monarchy needs to grow a f***ing pair of balls.
Okay, Andy, so, you know, you remember what happened with the Egyptian civil servant who got jailed for writing a poem that insulted Mubarak?
Yep.
We stepped up, Andy. We insulted the shit out of Mubarak.
That's right.
And now where is he? Well, here we go again. Brazil tried to ban people from making fun of the election in the 2 weeks leading up to their election. We stepped up, Andy. This story coming out of Thailand is the bat signal for us, Andy. in this case, it's the bullshit signal. If this bugle goes out, Andy, there's no more fitting way to go out than causing a diplomatic incident. I hope no one wants to go to Thailand, buglers, because it's about to become illegal to do so with what you're about to hear on your iPod. Okay. Dust it off. Hey, King Bhumibol Adulyadej, is that your real name, or are you just trying to cheat at Scrabble? Boom!
Bhumibol sounds like a medicine for advanced flatulence.
Boom! Oh, apparently King Bhumibol Adulyadej is semi-divine, which is interesting, because that makes me semi-give a shit. Boom, boom!
Adulyadej, I'd bloody dull my dej as well if I was so goddamn picky about a little bit of banter.
Hey, King Adulyadej, you've apparently accumulated $30 billion in wealth. Obviously, you haven't spent any of that money on a haircut. Boom, boom!
You got through 24 prime ministers during your overlong reign. Ever stop to think that it might be more about you than them? If I'd had 24 different prime ministers in my reign, I'd wonder whether I needed to bath more often.
And stay down! Hey, King Bhumibol Adulyadej, apparently your name means strength of the land, incomparable power. Are you sure it doesn't mean strength of the fish, incomparable asshole? Boom!
Bhumibol Adulyadej, also known as Rama the Ninth and Lek. Come on, Big Horse, at least choose a f***ing name. That's as indecisive as a sweet-toothed glutton at an award-winning one-pudding-only buffet.
King Bhumibol Adulyadej, apparently you play the saxophone. Hold on, Andy, he's actually achieved the impossible. He's made the saxophone even less cool. Hey, Your Royal Highness, Kenny G called. He said thank you for making him the second most boring musician in the world. Boom!
Hey, King, how many times have you won Wimbledon? Oh, it's all going to make quiet over there in Bangkok. 0 times! That's exactly the same as me, despite having vastly superior financial resources. Loser. Wealthiest monarch in the world. No-time world snooker champion. Loser. Loser.
Apparently, King Bhumibol Adulyadej wrote a book called The Story of Thong Deng. It's the story of his dog, Thong Deng. Andy, I have no joke off that. That's just inherently ridiculous. Boom!
Apparently, prosecution for lèse majesté, basically the crime of calling you names, Bhumibol Adulyadej. That's a bit rich, given how many f***ing names you call yourself. They've gone up 1,500% in the last 6 years. Getting a bit touching your old age, Grandad. Have a bowl of Tom Yum and lighten the f*** up. And here's a joke for you, Kingy. How many Thai monarchs does it take to change a light bulb? None. They're too busy worrying about whether someone might have posted something online that is slightly less than 100% complimentary about them.
Ooh.
However, Andy, and I can't overstress this, if the King of Thailand would like to sponsor the Bugle, I can promise him only favourable coverage in the future.
Well, that's us out of holidays to Thailand for the foreseeable future, although, to be honest, I might pop over there when my daughter hits the teenage years. Dealing with hormones and boyfriends, or 3 years B&B at the Bangkok Hilton. That is a no-brainer, John. Your emails now, and firstly, we will obviously no longer be using the Times Online email address. I have set up a temporary one, info@thebuglepodcast.com. I cannot guarantee how efficiently it will work, but hopefully it will work a bit. So do keep in contact via that. We've had some emails in about the impending divorce. This one came in from David Ownby in Montreal, Canada, who writes on the subject, "You bastards! You asked for Christmas messages and then you dropped this bomb on us. The Bugle cannot die! I'd have to stay in bed all weekend if the Bugle wasn't there on Saturday morning. Can't you sell the badonkadonk and threaten Donald Trump with it?" So we've had various other and various other comments similar to that on Twitter as well. So stay strong, Buglers. I mean, it's a tough time of year to have devastating news like this, but just try and, for the sake of your families, don't let it ruin Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no need for it to. Yeah,
don't let News International steal Christmas.
Yeah. Andy, I cannot believe this is still on.
So do send in your emails to info@thebuglepodcast.com and I'll try and access them with my minimal technological capabilities. So that's it, pretty much, for the Bugle 176, this historic, potentially last full Bugle here at Times Towers in Wapping. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, there are still tickets available for my run at the Soho Theatre, 6th to the 11th of February. Oh. It's got to be the ultimate Christmas present, John. Mm-hmm. I imagine you've probably got some for Hoagie to fly over from New York, and I've got a special little puppy section down the front.
Actually, no, Andy, because Hoagie is going to be enjoying me. Tickets are available 27th through the 31st of December in San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy Club. You see, Andy, it took 176 Bugles, yep, and we both sold out at the end.
That's right, John. I guess my ticket sales probably suggest that I needed to do that more than you do. I'm basically doing it to avoid speaking in an empty room.
Well, Andy, you know, we used to have a forecast section,
yep,
in the Bugle before we stopped doing it. And I guess it might be nice to bring it back for one final time now. And, well, the forecast is going to be two-pronged this week. Firstly, what stories do you think the Bugle would technically have covered next year had the Bugle stayed with the Times? Let me think.
Well, I don't know. I'd imagine maybe the phone hacking scandal.
No, I'm guessing that will probably come up. It, yep, doesn't seem like it's going to go away as a, yep, story. I think also maybe, you know, London Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up. I do believe that our opening ceremony will provide the yin to the spectacular yang of the Chinese opening ceremony. And rather than featuring a cast of thousands of people lifting blocks in a chillingly well-orchestrated fashion, our opening ceremony will instead feature one old English man in the middle of the stadium, coughing apologetically before igniting the Olympic torch with his lighter, which will be held by another old man standing in the stands for the duration of the game, shielding it with his hand.
Well, you say that, John. They're spending £80 million on the opening ceremony. They've just doubled the budget for it. Some people have suggested that those £40 million extra pounds might have been better spent on, for example, not sacking half the public sector, or, you know, putting some roofs on schools, or stopping some hospitals closing. Uh-huh. But, no, we have to do it, John. £80 million quid on a f***ing sponsored prance. Well done, Britain. Well done. But will it really reflect modern Britain, the opening ceremony? Only if it has 3,000 children dressed as unused ballot papers simultaneously shrugging.
Well, in terms of the US elections, Andy, I've got two words for you regarding that next year. President Trump. If not him, nobody. The Arab Spring, I don't know what countries are likely to be next, Andy. It seems unlikely that Assad is going to be able to hold on to power in Syria for much longer, but I think mainly the next leader of Libya is likely to be Silvio Berlusconi, Andy. It's his natural home, and it always has been.
Well, I see Italy and Libya go back a long way, don't they? You know, he could be the man, mm-hmm, to smooth over those troubled waters.
If Prince William and Kate Middleton have a baby, Andy, I believe that baby will be a lion cub that speaks fluent English.
What if they get divorced, John? What are the odds on that?
Then Pippa steps up to the plate, Andy, to do exactly what Pippa does best, which is just be Pippa.
Just wobble.
I think Mario Balotelli is likely to be fined 2 weeks' wages next year, Andy, for a goal celebration in which he pulls fireworks out of his shorts and sets them off in time to the music of Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me. But more important than anything, Andy, what's your forecast for what will happen to the Bugle? in the future.
John, I imagine it'll probably be picked up by the United Nations and
that's an option.
Broadcast in every single school in the developing world to show children that there is some hope, some good in the universe, even.
There's a chance. There's a chance
in
of
a universe
that.
That seems so uniformly harsh.
There are options we've been looking into so far. The Bugle might live on in a series of tattoos, each episode released onto a bugler's body, and then they're left to wander naked around the world, distributing it. The Bugle might go straight to a movie, although on past history, I don't think you want me in that, Andy.
We will be looking very hard at the casting. Maybe Rick Moranis as John Oliver.
But the
get him out of retirement.
The Bugle will live on, though, Andy. Just look around, buglers, with every bird flip, with every penis drawn on a wall, with every, Pippa, uttered around the world, with every pun and every subsequent scream of pain after said pun, we will be there.
And whenever you see a photograph of Florence Nightingale, oh, yeah.
Oh, one for the road, Andy.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we'll be back next week with the first of the two-part review of the year. Follow the latest updates on at Hello Buglers on Twitter and the Bugle Podcast Facebook page, which I might manage to somehow overcome all my prejudices against Facebook and post some updates on. And email us info@thebuglepodcast.com and listen out for news, Buglers. Have a phenomenal week.
Thank you, Buglers. Farewell!